Hello, everybody. How y'all doing? I'm Hank Wilson. Welcome to episode 65 of The Hidden History of Texas. This is Trials and Tribulations of the Early Spanish Explorers of Texas. Previously, I talked about the world in the 1400s and 1500s and how the early Spanish explorers, while looking for a path to India, bumped into Texas, and a little bit about native peoples that they encountered. Today, I'm going to further explore some of the trials and tribulations of the early Spanish explorers of Texas, and I'll also touch on the geography of Texas because that played a major role in how Texas was explored, and it affected the lives of those who lived here. There's an old Texas saying, "The sun has rose, the sun has set, and I ain't out of Texas yet." Texas is huge. If you're going to drive from Louisiana through Texas to New Mexico, you'll travel at least 982 miles. Or 1,580 kilometers for our non-American listeners. Now, when you look at a map of Texas, you can see that it does take up a whole bunch of the middle of the country. In fact, it takes up over 250,000 square miles, and that's a lot of real estate. Texas has four distinct physical or geographical regions, and in my opinion, those regions played an important role in the exploration and early settlements in Texas. How the early Spanish explorers dealt with the physical conditions and the people who were native to the various regions often decided if they lived or died. Now, the four regions are the Gulf Coastal Plains, the North Central Plains, the Great Plains, and the Basin and Range Province. Now, the Gulf Coastal Plains was the first area the Spanish encountered. Now, this runs along the Gulf Coast from the current Louisiana-Texas border, the Sabine River, down to the Texas-Mexico border, the Rio Grande. It runs inland and northeast up to Waco and the Oklahoma border. It has pines and hardwoods in East Texas, and as it moves west, the forest consists largely of post oaks, and even further west, prairies and brushlands. As you follow along the coast, you'll find scrub brush, sand dunes, and very little large vegetation. When you look at a map of the Texas coast, one thing you will notice is a set of islands that run pretty much the length of the coast. These are the barrier islands, and they serve a very important function. They mitigate or reduce the damage that wind and high surf can do to the land and does to the land on a regular basis. Now, this is especially true in the event of tropical storms and hurricanes. In current times, though, those islands have been developed to the point where their natural defenses have been removed or paved over. And so we often see heavy damage inflicted by modern hurricanes. The early Spanish had to traverse this terrain in order to travel to Mexico and inland, and the travel was made more difficult because they walked the majority of the way. By the time the survivors of the first expedition reached Mexico, they had walked on bare feet an estimated 2,400 miles from where they had first encountered the Texas tribes, the Mareams and Iguaches, or Iguaches, I don't know how they really want to pronounce it. Now, in the previous episode, I talked about how Alvar Nunez Cabeza de Vaca made the first recorded exploration of today's Texas, how he and his men were a part of a larger expedition led by Panfilio de Narvaez. Now, remember how De Narvaez's expedition landed in Florida and tried to return to Mexico by building rafts. Well, how those rafts ran into winds that blew them northwest, and they floated and bumped along the Gulf Coast from Florida until in late 1528, when many of the rafts came aground somewhere between Galveston and the Matagorda Peninsula. The raft captained by Cabeza de Vaca and one other raft came ashore on present-day Foley's Island, which is a little southwest of Galveston and northeast of Matagorda Bay. The total members of that party were just about 90 folks and included at least one African slave. Yes, at that time the Spanish had slaves, both African and Indians, and that would play a role in later Spanish political difficulties in both Mexico and New Mexico, and until the 1830s, a much lesser extent, Texas. Now, anyway, back to our story. The landing party was decimated by sickness, and Cabeza de Vaca named the landing spot La Isla de Malhado, the Isle of Misfortune. By spring of 1529, there were only 13 Spaniards and the African slaves still alive. Of course, one of those was Cabeza de Vaca, and he had ventured to the mainland where he became seriously ill during the winter. Now, since he was inland and not on the island, once the weather warmed, his men, who thought he was dead, and 12 of the 14 survivors on Malhado decided to move down the coast towards Mexico. When Cabeza de Vaca returned, he found only two of the Spaniards remaining in Malhado, not out of any loyalty to Vaca, but because they did not know how to swim and greatly feared crossing inlets and the mouths of streams. Cabeza de Vaca would later discover that out of the dozen who had made the journey, 9 died from accidents or Indian attacks. The 3 who remained alive were Alonso de Castillo, Andres Dorantes de Carranza, and the slave, the African Estevanico. Their method of survival wasn't glamorous or heroic. They survived by becoming slaves of the Coweticon Indians, now the Mariams and Iguaches. Now, after 3 years, in 1532, Cabeza de Vaca convinced the only surviving Spaniard, Lope de Oviedo, the other had died from illness, that they should move southward along the coast. He did this by convincing de Oviedo that he would carry him across any streams or inlets they might encounter. Everything went pretty well, at least until they reached Matagorda Bay. Unfortunately, it was then they ran into an Indian tribe, which Cabeza de Vaca called the Gavians. Now, the Gavians threatened to kill them by placing arrows over their hearts, and this, plus how wide the bay was pretty much it for poor Oviedo. He turned back, left in the company of some Indian women, and disappeared, never to be heard from again. It was then that the Gavians told Cabeza de Vaca something he never thought he'd hear. They told him that living across the bay, there were 3 Christians like him, and the Indians gave him their names. They were Alonso de Castillo, Andres Dorantes, and the slave Estevanico. They were from the original expedition. Now, after de Vaca was transported across the bay and turned over to the Mariams, he was reunited with the 3, all of whom had thought de Vaca dead. Now, this wasn't the end of things for him because, well, he and the other 3, they all became slaves. Now, finally, in early September 1534, the 4 men slipped away, split up, but they all fled south toward the Rio Grande. They finally had some good luck, and against all odds, they found each other by mid-month, and then they were accepted by friendly Avavares people, whose territory ranged southwest of Corpus Christi Bay. They remained with this group for about 8 months before leaving in late spring 1535 and finally crossing the Rio Grande into Mexico. As they were leaving their friends, they did their best to avoid their previous captors, and in doing so had to change their course from down the inner coast towards Santo Esteban del Puerto by turning west towards the Pacific Ocean. They crossed northern Mexico on their way to La Junta de los Rios at the junction of the Rio Conchos with the Rio Grande at present-day Presidio, Texas, and Ojinaga, Chihuahua. The group rested there and then crossed the Rio Grande and crossed into Texas, where they stayed for approximately 17 days. About 75 miles downstream from modern El Paso, they again crossed the Rio Grande and left Texas for the last time. Now, the men continued towards the Pacific Ocean, known to them as the South Sea, and at around Christmas 1535 saw evidence of their countrymen in a horseshoe nail and small belt buckle worn as an amulet on a string around the neck of an Indian. They picked up their pace and saw additional evidence of Spaniards in the tracks of horses and their abandoned campsites. At last, they arrived safely at San Miguel de Culiacan near the ocean, and from there they arrived in Mexico City in late July 1536. The early adventures of Dvořáka are incredibly important, and his writings of what he encountered provided us with a look at early life. For example, he was the first to describe the norther, a winter wind condition that blows down and turns South Texas into an icebox. And it really does. I've been through several of them. When he first went inland and was gone for 3 years, he survived by trading with the Indians. He then became the first European of record to become a Texas merchant. He carried seashells, some sharp enough to cut open mesquite beans, which are very hard, nasty little things, and what he called beads of sea, maybe pearls, we don't know, into the interior. He traded these items for bison skins and red ochre, which was prized by coastal natives for their body decorations. Importantly, though, he gave Spanish names to 17 native groups that lived in the region from the lower Guadalupe River to the Rio Grande. He describes the foods the natives consumed. He wrote, they ate pretty much anything that was alive and even some things not alive, like rotten wood and deer dung. He also pointed out that the coastal natives had a wider variety of diet that included beans, seeds, nuts, and berries. In a clash of culture, the Spanish, who had long ago changed from being a hunter-gatherer society, looked down on those who were very much hunter-gatherers. Now, further up the Rio Grande, far northwest of the Cohuitcans lived the Yumanos, a people I touched briefly on in the previous episode. They were perhaps related to the Pueblo people of New Mexico and who had migrated southeast by the early 1500s. The Yumanos depended on farming with small fields of corn, beans, and squash, and they lived in fixed houses, which was rare among the early peoples and was limited almost exclusively to the Caddos and the Cadohecos. They were skilled hunters, and their prey of choice was bison. Their permanent villages lay dotted along the Rio Grande, from its confluence with the Rio Concho to the location of modern-day El Paso. Now, it's easy to see some of the trials and tribulations of the early Spanish explorers of Texas that they faced. That they survived and eventually thrived is a testament to their endurance. It is even more impressive as to how the native people survived. Their life was not even remotely easy. It's important to remember that as we travel back in time, we view things as they were in those days and not how we wish they were from our current societal and morality viewpoints. And that's going to do it for this episode of The Hidden History of Texas. Thanks for joining me, and I'll talk to you next time.